I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. In 2012, Paul Trinetti began writing the Vexen series, a story of a future America. The first book was published in 2015, Manufactured. Last year, Moonshade Bluff was published, and this year, The Preservation Plan is to be published by Iguana Books. Mr. Trinetti joins me now to discuss his work, these books, and what a fiction reveals about the future and about where we are today. A lifelong resident of Toronto, Paul Trinetti worked for his family's business for almost 25 years. His writing comes out of a love of music. He has recorded nearly 70 original songs. The website for more is at paultrinetti.com. Please welcome to the Plant Online program from Toronto today, Paul Trinetti. Mr. Trinetti, good morning.
Good morning, Joe. How are you?
Pretty good yourself.
Excellent.
So you started this series in 2012, is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah. Were these the first books that you've written?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. I'm curious to know, we'll get into what's in the books in just a sec, but in terms of you as a writer, did you always want to write?
I would say my biggest influence came from my love and passion for music growing up. So it actually came from the lyrics of the rock bands, the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, and all my favorite bands, and just found those the words and the storytelling to be really draw me into writing. So along the lines, I like to always write lyrics myself and some poetry and short stories. And then in 2012, I figured it was time to bear down and put together this book series.
And you've written music before, right?
As a lyricist and vocalist, and yes, I've had music recorded. I've done 70 original songs, so I have a good friend of mine who's a music producer here in Toronto. And but I've done that as a hobby, in my spare time type thing, really have a passion for that.
Yeah, so I guess when you write song lyrics, you're not writing an essay. And so you have to be very economical or spare with the words that you use. And I guess that lends itself well when you start writing a book, say.
Yeah, I thought it really helped a lot, having that experience in writing the lyrics, because it's true, the economy of words is very important there. And then obviously when you're writing a novel, you have to take a couple of lines and be able to expand that into a few pages.
Yeah.
So that does a little bit of a difference there, but I think it does help to have that basic background.
Yeah, as a youngster, did you read a lot?
I read, I wouldn't say overly, but I did enjoy a lot of like Ray Bradbury and one of the things I really loved was the Twilight Zone, the original Twilight Zone series on television. I really enjoyed that quite a bit. But then again, yeah, the music was my big thing. Just really collecting all the albums. I was born in 68, so all my favorite stuff came out in the mid 60s to the mid 70s. So I was going buying all that record collection over the years, so that was more, I'd say, more of my passion than it was actually reading. But I did enjoy reading quite a few books as well.
Yeah. So the series is called the Vexen series. Would you give us a genesis of that name, say?
Yeah, well, Vexen is a farming town, a fictional farming town that I made up in the story. So basically, I like to describe it a little bit as the kind of the moral conscience of the story, because the story goes back and forth between the bureaucracy of the Washington politics and the corporate world of New York City, and it's intertwined with Vexen.
And so that's would you say that's in the Midwest?
I would say it's yeah, close to there. I never really get too caught up in the, placement of location and that, and I just kind of want to leave it to the reader to kind of, gather their own idea of what we're talking about.
Yeah, it's less fancy than, say, Manhattan.
Yes.
Or stuffy as Georgetown in Washington, say, right?
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Yeah. What draws you to write about what you do? Because, I mean, there are three books now,
mm-hmm,
and they're written in the science fiction vein, I guess. Is that right?
I would say I describe it more as a political sci-fi thriller type,
yeah,
thing. But being that it's in the story takes place in the near future, there definitely had to be a science fiction element in there.
Yeah.
However, I still like to think there's more of a humanistic story coming through.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned the speculative part because it's no one could have imagined where we are today, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. Some of the things when I basically did the outline for the story in 2012, and now here we are 4 or 5 years later, and some things in there have actually a little bit have come to fruition. And
it's an odd time, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite perplexing right now, and a little bit scary too.
Yeah, and the wonderful thing about your books is that there's a story, I guess, to this, and that's what'll draw readers in, and what has drawn readers to the previous two books, and I guess this third one that's upcoming. When does the third one come out? The Preservation Plan.
It's been released now.
Oh, it has.
Yes, through my publisher Iguana Books, and it's just starting to filter out last week. So,
yeah.
it's there, and it ties in the other two prior books, which are Manufactured and Moonshade Bluff.
Mm-hmm.
So there is the story continues. It's a trilogy, and I'm really excited about it. I think the Preservation Plan really ties it all up nicely, and we take a look at an America that's going through a difficult time in my story, and it's really searching for its salvation through the idea of coming together and finding unity.
One of the things that I guess you do in the course of writing is you come up, obviously, with the characters, you come up with a story. For you, what comes first?
For me, it was the story. I would say developing the framework of the story and then trying to fit the characters in there and giving the characters an identity to fit the story. I would say that would be foremost the way I would work.
And so what happens in Manufactured? Not to give it away, obviously, but it's sort of what happens in the book and the America that we see.
We see in America, when my story takes place, it takes place 25 years after a new civil war has divided America into peace bringers and militant alliance. So it's pushing further the idea of right wing and left wing to a real extreme element. So, again, this is near future, so I never actually tell the person when the story takes place, but it's anywhere between 50 to 80 years from now within that realm.
Yeah.
And so we find that this civil war that took place has created this massive political divide. In the midst of that happening, America was actually saved by what we call in the story the Outer Commission, which is a group of outside countries around the rest of the world that actually came and helped America, you know, keep itself going.
Mm-hmm.
In the midst of that, though, there is a massive debt that's being owed to that Outer Commission. And through the three books, we see America struggle in various different ways through different stories that actually lead to them having to face that looming deadline. And that deadline will lead itself to basically America being auctioned off, as I referred to, as cattle. So obviously that's something the country becomes really concerned about as
yeah.
the story's progressing. And realizes that we have to find a way to unite and come together.
You know, that's the thing that we I guess some of us have thought of it. I mean, you know, the Soviet Union ended recently, a couple decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
But Rome obviously didn't last forever. But we wonder with empires, especially like America itself, whether it'll last, and for a lot of people, that its survival, I guess, is just taken as a given that it'll be there forever. But I mean, it can be, as you've written in your work, it can be tenuous.
I think so. I think it's a big world, and there's a lot of things going on, and you know, I think also in my work, I touch on the media. And in my story, what happens is the Outer Commission, when it takes America over, decides that all federal politics now are going to be presented through a robot that I call in the story called Cryptic. And Cryptic is there to present all the news relating to federal politics to kind of obliterate the idea of the biases and that stemming from traditional media, which really grabbed me in a way, and it was a big part of the story for me, because when you watch different media outlets, what I find the most annoying thing is if you watch, let's say, more of a right-wing network, mm-hmm. no matter what, they'll always try and find something wrong with the other side, and then vice versa. And it's like they can never seem to present the middle ground at all. And I think that's what's really disheartening.
Yeah, and that's where when you come up with alternative facts,
right?
And the conversation is no longer civilized. It's rooted in, well, partisanship and some outlets hate.
Yes.
And we're seeing that obviously in the last little bit.
Well, we're seeing more than that than we want to see,
yeah.
And I hope that there's some solutions that can bring things together, and that's very important for the future, obviously.
What fascinates you about America? Because you're someone who you were born and raised in Toronto, is that right?
Yes, that's
yeah.
Right.
So, I mean, did you live there at all for a bit, or?
No, you know what? I've visited there on a few occasions here and there.
Yeah.
I think when I was writing the story, to make it more impactful, I thought it needed to be based, you know, on America.
Yeah.
It's not to demean Canada at all, but it just seemed to be able to... I wanted to make something really epic and powerful. And in order to do that, I figured I had to take it from an American political standpoint.
Yeah, it's a great landscape. And you know, I mean, we have our frustrations, obviously, as Canadians with our neighbors. But it is it's a remarkable place of history.
Sure.
And its impact is unmistakable in the world today and in the past as well. So I mean it lends itself, I guess, for such a grand narrative as you've crafted.
Yes, and it can be such a great, you know, there's no need for a lot of the problems that we have here, and what it stems from. It's just really questionable a lot of the time when you hear the stuff that we hear, and there's just no need for most of it.
Yeah. What is it about fiction for you that reveals, if anything, about reality? I mean, you easily could have written nonfiction, say, but there's something about fiction, isn't there, when you sit down to write it, that reveals a lot about who we are.
The power of the imagination is something that always grabs me when I'm writing a story. When I started writing this story, this was not about soapbox for me and, you know, preaching my political beliefs and anything like that. That was not the intent at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically to come out and create something that used the imagination and be able to world build. I really enjoy that part of things. And just kind of projecting ahead 50, 70, 80 years from now, I find it fascinating. And I hope in some of the things I wrote in my book don't come to fruition. And there's other things I hope do, because there are some positive elements in there as well. It's that old, you know, you have to go through the darkness to find the light kind of thing. And so, yeah, just more or less the enjoyment of creating and world building. That's really, I don't know if I'd ever be that interested in writing a nonfiction book. I don't think it would move me.
Yeah. So do you use fiction then to 'cause I mean, people can read history and then write fiction from that. Mm-hmm. Do you use fiction as a writer to predict what might happen, or do you use it to illustrate, say, the ideal that you might have?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think you have to combine both those elements in there. It's a good point that you raise, and I think by mixing those two components, I think you make for a story that becomes a little more realistic. And that's what I wanted to do here. I didn't want to get to, going back to what you said to me about the sci-fi, I like to describe it as a hint of sci-fi in there. There's some of that there. But in reality, I wanted to project something that I think possibly could happen. And like I said, some of the things in my story, I don't hope they happen. And then there's other things that I do hope happen as well.
Yeah. It's a sort of a cautionary tale, I guess, for some people, right?
Yeah, there's a bit of that in there. And it's a complete journey that from page one of the first book to the last page of the third book that you really have to go through in order to take it all in. Because there's a lot. I've got a lot of stuff in there, you know, taking a look at the dichotomies of all different elements of technology and nature and medicine and mysticism. So I tried to really, you know, they say don't try and be everything.
Yeah.
Sometimes I really took the other approach. I wanted to encompass all aspects of our lives.
This idea of the conflict between medicine and mysticism, because I mean that's something that we all encounter in our daily lives. You know, you've got a problem, and someone says, well, you do this, which a doctor might advise, or do this, which is some remedy that's passed down for generations. But this speaks to this thing we touched on earlier about what is fact and that some people have their own set of facts and some people have another. And we don't really have a generally agreed upon, discourse, do we? I mean, we're all pushed into our own silos of thought with little or no regard, hostile in some places for the other.
Yes, it's very agenda-based. I think, and you know, that's the disappointing thing sometimes is that you'd like to think that people can somehow find, you know, give an opportunity to alternative paths sometimes and not just be so stuck in their ways. And back to the idea of, you know, traditional medicine and non-traditional medicine, I think the marrying of the two can be a really good thing. But sometimes the traditional group doesn't want to look at that other side, and then vice versa. And I think that's a bit can be a bit disappointing as well.
But we're seeing, though, aren't we, with say non-Western medicine, if you will, greater, I don't know if respect is the right word, but maybe an acceptability or a tolerance, say.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. Unfortunately, there's some bad apples there that ruin it for everybody. Unfortunately, that happens as well. So I guess it's buyer beware, as they say.
Yeah. When you write about the political element, as you do in your books, what red flags might you raise about what might happen? And I'm curious to know, because people listening to this might not have picked up any of your books yet, in terms of what the public should do in terms of politics. I mean, the future that you suppose in your books, are you seeing people engaged and participating in democracy, say?
Well, another component in my book that's quite prevalent is this youthful rebellion that takes place in my story, and it permeates throughout the three books. I think this is a shift that's happening. I think we're starting to see it, and I think it's going to progress as time goes on. I think with the idea of technology continuing to progress, obviously, as it does, I think a lot more power is going to go into young people's hands. And I would not be surprised if, you know, when you look at TV now and you see all these senators and governors, and they tend to be mostly elderly gentlemen and ladies, I would not be surprised if we see a more youthful group and start seeing some 30, 35-year-olds there down the road, because I really think it's shifting. It's not always, I don't think it's always for the better, but I think that all people need to have a voice. And to make change happen, you have to have that. And the cautionary thing in my story is the root of it, which is the civil war I have happening in my story, where the story takes place 25 years after that civil war ends. And that's a scary thing. To see a country at war with itself.
Yeah. So do you after having written these three books, and thought about America as you have thoughtfully and carefully, Are you hopeful about where we're all headed? Because, I mean, I know we're Canadian, but, I mean, still, you know, whatever happens in the United States affects us, right?
I like to remain optimistic. I really do, because I think in the end we're all human beings, and I think sometimes, and that's what I came across in my story, is that unfortunately it takes tragedy, it takes times of peril to make the human spirit rise above that. And sometimes it's scary, the thought that it could get to the point where it really becomes on edge. It might be hard to reel it back in, but I think the human spirit will definitely prevail in that regard, and I think we'll see some better times ahead. It's just, it becomes quite turbulent, but I think I have the optimistic outlook.
Yeah, I guess that's the same with people, isn't it? That when tested, we do rise to the occasion.
For sure.
Yeah.
It's always that. When you're pushed to the edge, that's when you're forced to do things. It's just, it goes back to going to school and, you know, having an exam, and then you have 3 days prior to study, and you realize, oh, the exam's tomorrow. Okay, so then you cram it in the hour or two before.
What will you continue to write?
I think so. Right now, my goal with these three books is I really want to approach the idea of bringing them into either a television series or a motion picture series.
Yeah.
So that's at the top of the list at the time. But I'll definitely continue writing in some form or another. It's just part of me. And, you know, I always say this, I don't control my art. It kind of controls me. And I need to do that. It's part of me. So, but bringing this, like I said, bringing it to television, motion picture, and the story was written with that in mind. I, when I created it, I was constantly thinking of being able to visualize, and for most people who have read the books have told me that. They see that.
Yeah, I guess that's what you grew up in a generation, as did I, of we probably watched television or films before we read seriously. And I think from what I've read, I mean, I've read a little bit of your work. Mm-hmm. That idea of you can tell that the author is seeing something as he's writing it.
Yeah, thank you on that. It was my intent for sure, and the television thing was there definitely. As a youngster, I was fascinated by a lot of the television shows in the early mid 70s. And some of the visual aspects that came to life. I watched a lot of the Bonanza and some of those shows, and it was really fascinating to see that quality projected.
After three books and writing, as you have, what have you learned about your process, and what has that told yourself about how you are? I mean, there must have been an experience where you've learned something about yourself. Did you?
I think I would say I probably learned, yes, I'd say as I was writing, you know, when you're developing your story, you see different aspects in yourself sometimes, and because, again, it's that journey of, let's face it, it's the darkness finding the light kind of thing, and I think in all of us as human beings, life's never going to be perfect, we're never going to view everything in a positive way. On the other hand, we have to find the strength within to find that light and to have something guide us. So as I was writing the story, I think I went along with the roller coaster of it. You know, there's times I was writing something that was kind of dark in the story, and for a day or two you're kind of feeling a little bit under the weather on that. And then, you know, a day or two later something hopeful comes in your mind in the story, and you go with that. So just like a mixed emotions for sure.
Yeah, it's a hell of an achievement to have written three books as you have and written them as thoughtfully and as creatively as you have. Congratulations on that. And it's been a pleasure speaking to you, Paul, and all the best, and thanks for your time.
Well, thank you so much, Joseph. It was definitely my privilege, and I really appreciate it.
You're very welcome. The website for more, paultrinetti.com, The Vexton Series, is three books, and you can learn all about that. The latest one is The Preservation Plan. That's available now from Iguana Books. Paul Trinetti, join me on the line from Toronto and Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plante.